Welcome to the Deer Society Podcast. Here's your host, Brian Lemke.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to Deer Society Podcast. I'm Brian Lemke, joined by JJ Ducard and some special guests here in the middle, Mr. Andrew Cheslock and Connor Dice. Today we are talking about sheds. There's some sheds out here on the table if you're watching on YouTube. Talking about sheds and talking about turkey hunting. So winter is getting slowly behind us. It was quickly behind us, and then it kind of came back and reared its head a little bit, as it always does here in Minnesota. Can't complain. It's been pretty nice, though. But anyways, looking forward to spring, getting into April here, just around the corner. And yeah, transitioning from shed hunting into turkey hunting. But first, shed hunting. Andrew, I know you brought some kind of show-and-tell sheds in here today.
Absolutely.
I want to definitely talk about those, but before we talk about those, JJ, shed hunting, what have you been up to?
Well, there's a third element. There's some habitat food plot frost seeding, there's shed hunting, and then there's the scouting for turkeys. Still a little early here, though, but yeah, did a little shed hunt. I'm not going to steal the thunder from Andrew. He brought all these beautiful sheds up, like Ron. We can walk through them. They're just fresh brown sheds, and I know he wants to dive right in.
I left the chalky ones back in my office.
Let's, my favorite being this whitetail shed with a good, you know, inch and a quarter brow. One of my favorites.
That was a pretty cool one. Yeah, so I've been doing a shed hunt with my buddy Steve Harris Jr. out in Montana, and he usually scouts out where the deer are at, and we go to try to find some of those target deer in the Badlands and along the Yellowstone River and pick up sheds. I either spend 4 days, and this year I spent 6 days, which ended up paying off. Finally picked up some elk sheds. That was cool. That was fun. Got lost in the Badlands and picked up my first couple elk sheds along with some brown mule deer and couple whitetails. Whitetails was kind of slow this year just because of the mild winter. They also had a mild winter out there out west, just like we did here in the Midwest. So the whitetails were kind of all over the place. Found a few pockets of mule deer. Seems like when you find a pocket of mule deer, you got to like forget about it for 5 years because you won't find any from that because you picked up all the old ones and some of the brown ones that are around still. But yeah, I don't know. I just love shed hunting. I've been really getting into it the last couple of years. And I mean, my biggest takeaway from it is just, you just got to turn and burn. You got to, miles for piles is what they said. You know, they're like, you can go into it strategically, you know, south facing and winter grounds and food sources. But I feel like the best way is just to turn and burn and get lost and start walking.
Yeah, out there, I think it's definitely probably a little different strategy than it is around here, you know, with all of the ground. And obviously, you know, you look at the differences between whiteys and mule deer. How many miles did you walk when you were out there in those 6 days?
I walked 85. My buddy Steve walked 100. So a combined total was like 185 miles. We picked up 41 sheds and we climbed as a team 1,140 flights of stairs. So, and that's all Badland country. Like, I feel like when you get into the flatter ground, like you can turn and burn and easily rack up 100 miles, no problem. But the 85 miles I walked in the Badlands, the ups and downs and the shale rock, you know, slides and all that other fun stuff that the Badlands has to offer, it's tough walking, but it's fun. It's different country and stuff. So it's always cool to get away from the Midwest and check out something different, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. So you're ready for elk hunting is what you're saying.
We're training still, always training, sucking a lot of wind, building the lungs up, making them bigger. But yeah, I'm ready for some elk hunting.
I saw, you know, one of the cool things that you guys did is you had a boat. Kind of talk to me about that. That looked kind of cool.
Oh yeah. So those guys out there, you don't really see any like inboard outboards. It's all jet boats. You can literally put a jet boat in the river and you can drive that boat through like 2 to 3 inches of water. And not touch bottom or feel bottom or whatever, just keep going. But you got to really understand like the flow and structure of the river because there's giant cottonwood trees that are in the bottom of this thing. So like when the river gives out, all those big ice chunks start pushing and mowing down new paths and they're bringing up trees from the bottom that have been laying flat. and you could see some rapids. It could be one of it could be multiple things. It either could be a tree or it could be a rock pile or whatever. But yeah, those jet boats, man, it's fun. It brings a whole new element to shed hunting because you can go pop on these little islands and stuff and hit spots where people don't necessarily put in because you got to work a little harder to get to those islands and they're not easy. And sometimes the deer winter there and they'll stay there all winter long and then wait till the ice comes out. And you kind of know when the ice is going to go because the critters just kind of go back to the mainland. But yeah, putting in with that jet boat, that thing's wild. It's a fun boat ride, and Steve would be driving his boat, and he'll look at me really quick, and he'd be like, "Oh, we made it through that one." I'm like, "I don't care. Keep going. Let's go get some sheds."
Well, that's awesome. Well, it sounds like a successful trip, and got a pile of sheds to show for it. So that's pretty cool. Some whitetail and some mule deer and some elk sheds. That's awesome. There's few places that you can go. It seems like it's weird to think about for us around here being, just in the Midwest, places that you can go that you can pick up in the same day, a whitetail shed, a mule deer shed, an elk shed, and then even potentially a moose paddle, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was one away from bringing home the Grand Slam, and it's just that moose paddle. Out there, it seems like everyone knows, where the moose are at or wintering because they all got their trail cameras out, or some people live on the river and they can see them, and when a moose drops its antlers because everyone goes, boats are dropping in, people are walking everywhere, they're on it, they find them within a couple of days.
It's awesome.
It's crazy, but yeah, it's fun.
Right on. Well, Connor, I know that you have already been out turkey hunting, and I want to hear about that.
Nah, I think we got more shed stories first.
Well, I was gonna say, but first I want to keep on this shed journey. Do you have a turkey tag punched already, huh?
A couple?
Oh my goodness. Connor's always jumping the gun, getting out there, turkey hunting. But before we talk about that, JJ, Whitetails from Scratch, property, shed hunting. How'd it go? And are you done?
For the most part, done. Yeah, I was just thinking about, Andrew's talking about his strategy and all the miles you put in and the contrast of that to what my strategy has been. Kind of lining up weather. We got flexibility here. Obviously, it's not that far away. I don't have to travel. So always cloudy, rainy days. Watching the reveals to make sure most of the bucks have shed. And then just trying to time it to where, I basically grid search the property day by day, section by section. Especially on a year like this where the deer are out feeding everywhere. They're not condensed into certain feeding spots. So the sheds are scattered. So we didn't find as many this year. But that process stayed the same where it's, day by day. Using the Onyx map tracking, section by section, walking slow. I don't know how many miles I put on. It wasn't that many, but I go 20 yards at a time and just zigzag the whole property. So I believe I found most of what was there. Missed one or two, but when it's cloudy like that, overcast, wet, rainy, you see those sheds pop. And that was the strategy. So I think we found probably around 15 or so. Which was less than we were hoping for, and then we didn't find some of the big boys, which was strange because a lot of times I still have reveals running where, I get a lot of bucks with half racks, and then the next day they drop that other side, and we didn't find any of those sheds. So I think they're just out in open fields at the neighbors. Maybe Andrew's picking them up. I don't really know what's happening to them.
Yeah, but got a couple spots, hidden spots.
Which is not the same as what you experienced in Iowa.
Yeah,
I went down for a shed hunt. You said they were all on those fields. I didn't see that at all this year.
Yeah, were most of the ones you found in the timber kind of spread out?
Pretty much all timber. I mean, we had standing corn, standing beans, found one on the corn and beans.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. One, to your point, where are the big ones? I think that you thought maybe you missed around the neighbors. Inevitably, I don't care how cloudy it is or the weather could be ideal, inevitably you're always walking that next year and you're like, dang it, and you see an old one or something. And, I think it's impossible to get everyone, you may be walking next year and it's like, oh, there's that one that I was looking for. And you probably walked by it already twice, and that's just the way it is. It's crazy how different factors can impact how you see it or just how they lay, and get covered up with something or squirrel moves them a little bit or something. So Yeah, I kind of experienced the same thing on the property here in Minnesota. Deer were really spread out, and we did not find a lot of sheds where typically, you know, the group of us finds quite a few, but barely any. Same kind of story. We did find, I think Lance found four old ones, you know, from last year that, you know, weren't really, didn't seem like hard ones to find, but we definitely walked by them last year. So yeah, deer spread out this year here. Now, Iowa, spent some time down in Southeast Iowa a weekend with my family, and we found a pile. I think the total group of us there in really a day and a half found, I think, 135-ish, and they were all on food. And that's what they said. It was unlike typical years down there. So they got hit early with a big snowstorm and cold, where typically their weather is more sporadic. They don't get as much snow. So the deer are usually more spread out, where this year it was more like it is up here typically. You know, deer were really on those food sources. I mean, we'd pull up to an acre standing bean field and, you know, would find 18 sheds in the bean field or just offside of on the outside of the field. And that's what they said, you know, they were running a lot of reveals and the deer weren't leaving there all day long. They were staying there. They were feeding there. They were bedding there. It was like, they didn't want to do anything else. So sheds were really congregated there. And all of them, for the most part, around food sources. You know, I spent a weekend there in Wisconsin. Homegrowner Love the Grind does their annual shed hunt over there. And, you know, we found a pile over there too. How many did we find, Connor, in that weekend?
225, I think, or something.
Yeah, I think it was over 200. But again, same kind of thing, like where you'd normally hear, you know, or there in Wisconsin, find a bunch of sheds, you know, laying in those food plots. Still did find some, but a lot more in the timber. That was just kind of a common theme.
Like, what kind of food plots? Like, are you finding them, like, on grain? Are you finding them on green? Because I can tell you this year, for me, I had a Wisconsin lease. I had 2 acres of soybeans. Not one deer touched a single bean.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, we did find them in beans still. You know, we still had some cold weather here and a little bit of snow. So we did find some in bean fields. You know, edges were big. I think green sources this year were hit a lot harder because they were accessible to deer with the lack of snow. So there was definitely sheds on green food sources. And then in sporadic, there's food everywhere. You know, when you don't get that snow like that, I mean, these deer can feed everywhere. We had a giant acorn crop this year. So, you know, a lot of oak flats, I think, were good spots to find sheds this year. And you know, if you're out there and you're still shed hunting, you know, we're not out of that phase completely yet. And you're still looking for sheds. I think these oak flats are great places, especially this year in the upper Midwest, to find sheds.
Absolutely. I remember I went down to Iowa and I found a match set again, like on some of the public land in Iowa, like farmers like leave a couple acres of standing soybeans or standing corn or whatever. And there was a couple standing grain plots I walked through again. Like, it didn't seem like a single deer was hitting them, but I ended up finding a match set in the timber, south facing slope, acorn flat up on top. And then there was a green cattle pasture. Yep. So that's definitely, greens definitely seem to be the ticket this year, along with knowing where your acorn flats are.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting year here too. It seems like we had a lot more deer holding on to their antlers later. And, you know, it seems like we always have a few that hold on late, or, you know, there's obviously on the other end of the spectrum, a few that shed early. But it seemed like this year, based on what we're seeing on reveals, I mean, JJ, you had quite a few bucks even up to this last week, you know, still holding both sides.
Yeah, and that seems, I mean, maybe that's normal. I mean, remember that one year we had Peyton that went through, what, April?
Yeah.
So we've had deer go real late. But yeah, it seemed like they held on. But then, so part of the strategy I had waiting for all the deer to shed, unfortunately, that means that, or most of the deer shed, you know, we had one of the main bucks shed based on the reveals January 26th. Well, those sheds are sitting out there. You know, they're getting chewed on for over a month while you're waiting for most of the deer to shed because you don't want to blow them out of the area. So kind of a different strategy. I mean, you could go in there and see, okay, this buck shed, walk around and maybe scare some deer off and lose the opportunity later. But this year, maybe I should have taken that that route and tried to find that buck early, let the deer kind of work back in, and then do a secondary shed hunt. But it's tough. I don't know how you balance that.
What would you say the percentage of deer shed, at least down here in Southeast Minnesota? What do you think the percentage is? You think they're all done? 50%?
I haven't 60, seen one 70? With an antler for at least a week, but there's always that outlier, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think if you had asked that question a couple weeks ago, just even, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, I think the answer would probably be different. It seems like, you know, from what collectively we've been seeing on the reveals, that over 90% probably are shed at this point. You know, there's still the outlier, and I'm sure there still are a few hanging on. But I would say the majority at this point are shed here in the upper Midwest anyway. So, Connor, you've been doing some shed hunting, obviously. But mainly headed to Nebraska, had to get the jump start on everybody. Turkey hunting, how'd that go?
It was pretty fun. Last year we went out there for the first time. It's kind of like a special reservation hunt, so it opens, you know, earlier than the Nebraska regular season. And I mean, it's a big, I mean, you can hunt almost the whole reservation. It's kind of, you know, diverse on one side. On the west side, it's kind of all your open flats, kind of groves of trees, tree lines. Then on the east side, it's all hardwoods, so different type of stuff. You know, me and Jonah got lucky. We found a flock of birds last year out in the middle of nowhere. So we hunted them, shot two toms out of them, and we kind of just didn't really push in that hardwoods at all. Then we went back this year, me and a buddy Brennan, and we dove kind of right in the hardwoods, and we got into them right away. It was insane.
How do you approach that going out there? I mean, that's, again, big ground that you don't have a lot of history with. Now you're fortunate enough to hunt there last year, so you had an idea. But, like, how do you even start to approach that from a scouting standpoint?
Yeah, so basically, I don't know, the DNR guys out there kind of give you a little advice on where to start or where they've been seeing some birds, where, you know, people are hunting. What we did, you know, we just kind of went down to the egg fields the first night. There's egg fields on the bottom of, you know, the big timber. We kind of just sat there and listened, roosted birds, and then we kind of just dove in the first morning and went right after, you know, the birds that we roosted the night before. And we kind of hunted that flock the whole time when we were out there. There's probably 200 birds. I think there's like three different flocks within that, I don't know, half mile section. So, yeah, basically, I mean, we got lucky the first day, I would say, of finding that flock right away, a big enough flock that was huntable. So, gotcha. Yeah, because, I mean, there's so much ground you could hunt, you could walk all day and not even covered a fourth of it. So,
what advice do you have for hunting early season turkeys like that? So obviously, as the season changes, you know, some of those big flocks break up and the hunting changes. What advice do you have on, you know, hunting some of those big flocks and how to potentially be successful, not just there, but really anywhere early season turkeys?
Yeah. You know, basically it's, you got to do what the hens kind of want to do and kind of got to get in front of them. So the first morning we hunted them, we actually sat down on that egg field and all the birds stayed in the timber. Nothing came down below. So then the next morning, you know, we just got kind of right in their bedroom. We were probably 200 yards from the one roost and 500 yards from the other one. And then we had a couple random birds roosted 100 yards away from us. So we basically just kind of got right in their bedroom and knew where that's where they wanted to go. You know, when we were walking in the dark, we could see turkey scratching all over and we kind of just knew, you know, this is where they are, this is where they're going to be. But yeah, I don't, just kind of get, we got in front of them and called the hens in and it worked. So I think basically you got to call the hens in. Otherwise, you're kind of, you know, it's going to be tough because they're going to follow them. They're going to do what they got to do.
Gotcha.
Find the honeys.
Yep.
JJ, any turkeys out in on the whitetails from scratch property?
There's a couple out there. Yeah, you can tell they're starting to break up a little bit. I mean, we had a crazy winter flock over, it was over 125 birds on that one reveal video, but I think we had close to 16 or 18 toms, but now I'm seeing 3 to 5 toms. So birds are definitely starting to break up. We had winter come spring here this past week, so really locked them down and kind of shut them down a little bit. But they were getting pretty fired up a few weeks back when it was warm. It was 70 degrees. They were gobbling. I mean, they were going crazy. Now they're just kind of back to feeding a little bit. They're still strutting out in those fields, but they're breaking up. Yeah, the groups of toms and jakes are threes, fours, you know, six. Not what it was, but seems like every year comes spring, just in our situation, you know, you have the winter flock there and then they break up and then you're just seeing one, or, you know, mid-season after some people are shooting some, neighbors are getting some birds, we shoot a couple, gets to the point where you're like, man, you hear like one tom in the morning or see a couple, you just look back at when there was 20, you're like, man, what happened? You know, yeah. Like they all just split up and obviously half die, but yeah.
Is there going to be like a Tiger Tail Junior or a Captain Hook Junior?
Last year was such a rough winter. I don't think we have a lot of really mature birds. It seems like Tom's looking at the spurs and it's just like, they look like 2 year olds. It's always exciting when you see that just monster come in and get giant spurs and huge, huge, you know, breast. That's a good thing, no matter if you're Drake or not, but, yeah, big bird is exciting.
Like, I've always wondered this, like, how do you even, like, estimate the age of a bird? Because to me, like, a turkey is a turkey.
Like, I'd just say spur length, probably. I don't know. That's what I think most people kind of go off of.
Yeah, you know, I that's good. I don't know. I'm not an expert turkey ager, I guess. Yeah, I think, you know, spur length plays a role in it. You know, beard length can fool you a little bit.
Because what happens when the bird gets beard rot?
Right. That's what I'm saying. So, yeah, that could fool you a little bit. I don't know. Do you know how to age a turkey, JJ?
It's probably like deer. I think they say, you know, the base of a deer tells you more. Base of the antler tells you more about age than a lot of those things, but that can be not accurate too. I guess, I was just thinking about you. Like, is there any tiger tails or any unique birds? Maybe we should go for like the afro bearded turkeys. So you ever see those ones where it's just a puff in front of their chest? And we should go for like the afro bird.
Yeah. The afro bird.
You can
something
tell.
Unique.
You can tell JJ is just like hardcore deer hunter, because every year it's like, you know, going turkey hunting, he's like, yep. And then he's got one picked out. There's a flock of 125 in front of his reveal camera. And he's like, yep, that's the one right there. Like, that's him.
Make it interesting, you know. Beautiful footage. Turkey's full strut in your face, less than 15 yards. Nope, it's not Captain Hook. Nope, it ain't Tiger Tail. Gotta pass him.
No, that's exciting. What do you see? I mean, for you guys, obviously you have implemented, you know, the micro plot system time and time again, you know, on the Whitetails from Scratch property. You know, from a like a clover plot standpoint, are those areas that you will focus on upcoming now for turkey season?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we got just a really good roost area, so anything around that. But yeah, those green fields are good. Typically, we got a lot of rye fields too coming in green in the spring. Don't love that chisel plowed or disced under corn. The farmer likes to work that soil pretty deep. It gets pretty messy. So we hunt one way, you know, at the property that we manage, but I also like getting out and doing some running and gunning, head over to Wisconsin, just grab the shotgun and walk around, no decoys. And I enjoy that just as much, or, you know, hunt somewhere else like that too. I like running and gunning, changing it up.
Yeah.
Not just sitting in a blind or trying to set up and decoy and call them in. It's fun to stretch the legs a little bit and be like you're a Navy SEAL for like 15 minutes, you know? So,
I mean, always fun. Running gun with a bow this year?
Nope. I tried that.
Nope.
I missed the headshot one time.
Yeah. Give me them whammy shells and send it right to their face.
End point. That's the goal.
There you go.
Buy them a bunch of cross turkeys. We get like three or four in one morning.
So yeah. If he's out there at 100 yards, you sending it?
No. 10 yards and in.
There you go.
Five guys in the blind.
Well, family triple. That'd be good. Kind of unique.
What's some of like your go-to like items turkey hunting? Like if you had to pick like three items, maybe six, I don't know. Are you bringing a whole backpack full or are you keeping it light?
Well, how many items? Give me a number.
What's a good number, Brian? What do you think? Three, six?
Three.
Three?
Yeah, the question is
three. Three go-to items turkey hunting.
Outside of apparel and backpack.
Like your needs, like I need
do
this.
A slate call, a crow call.
Maybe Connor only needs two.
License?
Well, my license. That'll be the three. Yeah, because, I mean, apparel, you know, just good camel. Yeah, I was going to say a face mask. I think that's crucial. So,
about maybe getting a little tan, maybe, so you're not so white.
A little face mask, crow call, and slate call. I mean, that's kind of really all you need. So,
I can tell you, I've turkey hunted quite a bit early mornings with JJ over there. And I can tell you what the number one thing that he never leaves the truck without, turkey hunting. Cup of coffee.
Well, it's in a really well-sealed mug.
I tell you what, that is a strategy.
Flop and roll.
That's a strategy. And I don't know what kind of mug that is, and this is not a pitch for whatever that coffee cup is, but it is solid. Seals right up, puts it in his backpack. Like, it doesn't open, locks, doesn't spill. Gets in the blind, and he looks at me every time, and he's like, oh, did you forget your coffee? That's a shame. As he sips on it. But that's his number one turkey tool, coffee.
Okay, especially in a blind, yeah.
I would say, yeah, that, but I got a question for you guys. What do you think about calling birds on the roost? I don't know anyone's opinion.
Calling birds on the roost. I think it depends on the situation. I think if you think that you're in the advantage spot and they're going to fly down or come to where you are and or where the hens are in relation to where the toms are, I think it's all situational. I'm not afraid to give them a few while they're on the roost. I don't think you want to overcall them necessarily. But I think it's all situationally driven. Where are the hens at and what is the situation that you're in? I've been in way more situations where you think you're in a good spot and they come down off the roost and go the other way. More times than not, that has happened. So I guess I'm not afraid to call it them on the roost, but that's just my opinion and situationally driven.
What about you, Connor? What are you doing?
I think that too, situation. I would say 75-25, though. I'd rather not call to them on the roost and just kind of hit them right when they get on the ground. Especially if they don't have hens, then yeah, call them on the roost. But I mean, I feel like if they have hens, they're going to go the opposite way 90% of the time.
JJ, what are you doing?
Yeah, I agree with the situational setup. If you're set up to where you think they're going to come, I don't think you need to call. But if you're trying to pull them into something that they're likely not going to go toward, give them a little assembly yelp in the morning. Not a bad idea. Yep. Get them thinking. Maybe start fighting with a hen. You know, they start yapping, you start yapping back at them and cut them off a little bit. But keep it pretty simple.
What am I going to do? Full send baby litter, rip. They're either going to play or they're not going to play. On to the next one if you ain't playing.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely something to be said about that, too. Like, I know guys will sit there and work birds for a long time, and I'm all for that. But, you know, I like the run and gun model, and I like hunting turkeys that want to play too. Like, you know, turkeys that want to gobble, turkeys that want to work. Like, that's where the fun comes into turkey hunting. So, like, there's nothing wrong with shooting a bird that's silent. You have to put a lot of effort into and you got to be strategic on. But I like the ones that gobble and you can work and play. I'll tell you, one of the tools that I like to use, especially, I don't know, it seems like later in the year, is a gobble tube. I know some guys are good enough to gobble with their mouth or, you know, but I like to use a gobble tube actually. And I've just had birds that I'll never forget. Years ago, I hunted this one turkey in Minnesota, and it was like I hunted him 2 days off the roost, and he went the other way every time. And then third day, I went in there, and all I did was gobble at him. Every time he gobbled, I'd gobble back at him. It was like that sucker came in on a rope. And now, granted, it could just be coincidence. It could be, you know, third day he was just, that's what he was going to do anyway. But I have had a lot of success, especially later in the season, using a gobble tube, along with some hen calling, but challenging those birds with a gobble as well. Just personally had success doing them.
So you're saying one of your three items is a gobble tube. What's the other two?
My other two probably are, a slate call. And then a mouth call. I mean, I think you know, face masks obviously important, that kind of thing. But yeah, nothing too crazy out of the box. Like, I think if you can stay concealed and you have at least one option to communicate with them, you got a chance.
Yeah. Okay, JJ, so you got your favorite coffee mug. What's your other two items?
That's for blind hunting. Definitely need that. Some snacks. If you're gun running and gunning, I like to have one decoy. Something that'll, I think the Avion ones I can, you know, blow up or deflate and just kind of run with that in your backpack just in case you need it. I like a slate over a box call, and then I call with my mouth, so I save one item with that. And then you need one shell.
Just one shell.
Just need one.
Just one.
Yeah.
Wow. Blast them.
Yeah.
Definitely got to have your coconut donuts. Start the morning off. That seems to be my ritual thing. What would slate call? And then I love my HDR strutter from Avion. That thing is sweet. Like, people are like, oh, you can't use a strutter right now. Use a jig. And I'm like, well, again, me, full send. Either you're going to play or you're not going to play. You're going to know really quick.
You're either going to set it up or you're going to walk behind it, right?
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Yeah, I like using a strutter decoy most of the time as well. I mean, I know that there's a lot of guys out there that use a Jake or, you know, just a hen or not use them at all. But I think I've just had, again, personal here, but I've had more success over strutter decoy than anything. I think, you know, kind of gets that excitement level up too. Like if a bird comes in and works with a strutter decoy, like, that adds to the experience. You know, turkey hunting, again, for me, is more about that experience with the birds and not like, oh, just have to kill one. Like, I like having that. Like Andrew said, I know you, JJ, have passed birds at 15 yards just to, because you're waiting for the right one. But that, it's more about that experience, getting birds to work the right way and calling them in. That's what's exciting about turkey hunting.
Would you rather be set up where you know they're all going to go in a blind, so you're kind of limited to moving with your preferred decoy setup right away in the morning, so you get them before they you know, fly off the roost? Or would you rather be run and gun mobile style at 9, 10 o'clock?
Connor?
I mean, most of the time we're filming, so I'd rather, you know, kind of be set up right away in the morning, because it's hard when you're filming and it's 9, 10 o'clock, you get on birds, like you're scrambling to do everything, you're not set up the way you want to. Like, I'd rather be set up, you know, right off the roost, find all the birds there without a blind and kind of have like a natural blind for the best look.
Andrew?
Oof. I don't know. Like, again, like what Connor said, like if you're filming, like, yeah, get the birds on the roost. But honestly, like a friend of mine on Western Minnesota, she swears by the 10 to 2 hour, like birds between that 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And I don't know, a lot of my spots, I usually just try to get them on the roost, but golly, I tell you what, it's nice to sleep in once in a while.
No doubt. Yeah, I think that there's, you know, both can be super exhilarating. You know, there's nothing better than getting up and getting out there and then like hearing them gobble in the dark, especially if they're close to you. And then, you know, working them in the morning, especially they seem typically, I shouldn't say that, even that, but like they're obviously pretty vocal on the roost and early, those early first hours of the morning. So like there's nothing better than that. You feel that, right? Like you, all of us sitting here and all of you guys listening that have turkey hunting before, you feel that, right? Gobbling on the roost and that cool air and just that's turkey hunting feel. So I don't think you can beat that. However, you know, if you don't get them right off the roost there, I like going and running and gutting them and getting aggressive. And, you know, I like that. It's hard for filming, but like that going, striking one up and like, boom, he's right there. Get ready. Like, no, let's do this. So definitely aspects of both.
Here's a question. Could you go turkey hunting without a camera?
100% yes.
Yeah. You don't feel like naked or anything with like without it, like since it's like ingrained into us and that's kind of what we do professionally for a professional career. We're always filming something. Like, could you go, I mean, not even turkey hunting, could you go deer hunting too? Like, not bring a camera?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I yes and no. I think turkey hunting's a little different feeling for me than deer hunting. I always feel naked without a camera. You know, just because I enjoy capturing the essence of what's going on out there, and I like sharing that. Like it's
going right here.
It's yeah. I mean, a cell phone. But you know, I love having a camera there. I always regret when I don't take one, but. You know, we spend so much time behind the camera that like it's nice to look up outside of it every once in a while. This past year, like my little boy Barrett, who is going to be turning six, he's turkey hunted with me before and just been there when I've shot turkeys last year in Wisconsin last spring. He shot his first turkey. You know, I was there kind of behind the gun with him and helped him through it. And I struggled with that on the front end. Like, do I take a camera? Do I not take a camera? And I didn't take one. I did set up a POV. I set up a GoPro in the blind and captured the reaction. And for me, that was the coolest part anyway. Like, you know, the situation that went down and the reaction and that kind of stuff. So I guess in a sense, I did take one, but I didn't film. And it was gorgeous, these turkeys strutting through an alfalfa field. And my father-in-law was there, and they actually doubled on these two toms that came in. So just this epic experience. But I feel like if I would have had the camera there, I would have been not more focused, but that would have taken away from the experience that I had there with him. So I can see it both ways. Do I still feel naked? Do I look back now and say, I wish that I would have had a camera? Yeah, I do. But on the other hand, like, I think if I would have had the camera there, I would have wished the opposite, because I know just naturally that's where my brain goes in that situation. So I think it's important to be able to go out. I think turkey hunting is a great way to go out and enjoy those moments without getting too caught up in, you know, the camera side of things.
Have more fun with it. Kind of maybe be silly. You don't have to be as serious like deer hunting, because we're truly passionate about whitetails. I feel like for me, at least, like turkey hunting, I'm just like, whatever. Like if I go, great, sweet, cool. Try to have a little bit of fun with it. Don't be so serious. Like, loosen up. It's something different. I don't know, DJ. Would you feel naked without a camera?
No. So kind of turkey hunting and shed hunting both have elements to where you can be like loose and enjoy with family. Like shed hunting, you know, I take my kids, backpack them in, walk field edges, can't walk through the woods because they'll get smacked in the face with branches. But you know, it's just that kind of low-key thing. Maybe it's midday, a couple hours, sunny. Turkey hunting too, you know, you can go with a friend or family and sit in a blind and just kind of mess around. Maybe you're mushroom hunting midday, but then there's also the serious part of it too, where if it's, you know, you are running and gunning, you don't have the camera, you can kind of feel like you're really dialing in strategy turkey hunting, or you're shed hunting and you're in the bedding and you're, you know, try to understand the details of the bed and the rub and which tree stand you can be in, and like it's a different mode. So I like elements of both, where it's serious and not serious. The non-serious or the kind of more relaxing part for turkey is filming in a blind, getting like when we were at IMAX, was that last year or 2 years ago?
2 years ago now?
We had those jakes just about
like, oh, the WWE match.
Jump in the blind, and it was, you know, an epic morning. We got all that footage. That we can share and look back at for the rest of our lives. But then there's other times where I just want to go out there and do a little belly crawl and shoot one with a shotgun and walk back, you know, clean it up and eat it, you know. So don't need the footage for that. It's just a memory that's in my brain. So I like both. I like all aspects of turkey hunting and shed hunting, and the seriousness and the relaxed. And it's different than whitetail, which for most of us is like full on, really serious, not family oriented all the time. It's pretty intense.
You definitely know when deer season is around here in the Deer Society office and Almaday office, or moods and the vibe changes. It goes from like
game time.
Yeah. It's full on, full send. Let's find these deer and smack them.
Or practice, game time.
Talk about practice. let's transition to spring work here. So, you know, lots of fun things going on, shed hunting, turkey hunting. Another fun thing is spring work. You call it work, but it's exciting. It's exciting to get out there in the field, start planning for the year ahead. Whitetail season is only months away. You know, and they just shed, but it'll be here before you know it. Frost seeding, spring plots. JJ, talk me through just what that looks like and what's coming up.
Yeah, we're hitting this time of the year where I think a lot of people are, well, obviously we're shut out in Torquay and there's a lot of fun things to do. People start fishing a little bit more, but yeah, the focus off of, focus shifts off of deer hunting. People aren't super excited. They're not seeing deer with racks. They're not seeing velvet growth yet. Deer look really scruffy. You know, they're changing their coats. It's like, it's not a real, not a lot of people are fired up. Some people are shooting their bows, but you got to keep yourself kind of into it. So some things that we do habitat-wise is, you know, frost seeding. You know, maybe you're reviewing your stand placements and new strategies. And if you can do habitat work, maybe you're cutting down trees, you're making some trails. So there's a lot you can do right now. Kind of keep you engaged. But I think for the most part, people, and we see it with engagement with videos, podcasts, social media, like people are kind of out. The general public is kind of like shifting away from really caring a lot about whitetails. Now there's 10-20% that are diehard like us that are into it 365. But you can definitely tell this is that shift right now after people are shed hunting turkey hunting, that they're going to, a lot of people will forget about whitetails for the next 3-4 months. We don't.
I was going to say, we don't ever stop.
but it's, I mean, the analytics definitely show it.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, lots of work to be done, lots of planning, lots of thoughts ahead. It'll be here before you know it.
You got my spot
already
picked
here.
Out.
That's what I'm saying. It's already here for us.
You got my spot picked out, JJ, over there on your farm?
Yeah, there's this doe.
Big old nanny.
White leg. She's got one white leg.
Brian, you got my spot ready on your farm over there?
Oh, yeah. You got to compete with the... with my boys and Allie, and good luck with that. She's pretty tough these days, and my boys are pretty relentless. So if you can take on that crew, you got it.
Can't hunt all spots.
Hey, I got a lot of kids now. I got three boys that are growing fast. So
I guess I got to pick the number ahead of Adam too, I guess.
No, lots of good stuff here. Lots of good stuff coming. Definitely keep up with the Deer Society and Illusion on social media. We'll be posting updates, shed hunting updates, turkey hunting updates, all across the board. And then obviously Deer Society on YouTube. Going to be filling that timeline with YouTube shorts, cool engaging stuff, as well as some groundwork series, frost seeding, springtime plot tips, and then work as we go through the summer to help you guys really improve your stuff along the way too. If you're thinking about whitetails, we're definitely thinking about them. So if you're watching on YouTube, make sure you subscribe. Lots of that stuff coming. If you haven't done so already, download the Deer Society app. It is free. And thanks for tuning in. Stay tuned. Check out these big sheds if you're watching. And good luck out there in the woods.
All our sponsors here at Deer Society are partners whose equipment we know we can trust are going to make you more successful and have a better experience in the field. Products like Illusion Systems, maker of the Black Rack, the Extinguisher, and the Phase Body Odor System. Tacticam, Reveal Cell Cameras, 10-Point Crossbows, Onyx Maps, Osseo Gear, Huiman, and Big Frig.